తమసతోమా స్వర్గమయ తమసోమా జ్యోతిర్గమయ మృత్యోర్మా అమృతంగమయ. Today is a very, very important day, and I wish you all a happy Easter. We are gathered here today to celebrate Easter, a festival that for Christians proclaims that death does not have the last word, that despair is not final, and that a new life is possible even when everything seems lost. In our age, marked by war, polarization, ecological anxiety, loneliness, and a deep crisis of meaning, this is not only a remembrance of a past miracle, it's a living question. Can there be really a resurrection of hope, of conscience, of our deeper humanity here and now? Vedanta invites us to look at the Easter story not as a dogma that must be either accepted or rejected, but as a transparent window into universal spiritual truths about the self, suffering, sacrifice, and transformation. From this standpoint, the life, crucifixion, and resurrection of Jesus become a great parable of the journey from the ego-bound individual to the realization of the divine reality. That's our true nature. The journey from I am this little person to I am one with the infinite spirit. So what I said just now will be more explicit and relevant to you when I talk about the Vedantic perspective of Christ and Easter. Some of you who may not be familiar with the history of Christianity in the East may not be aware that Christianity reached India almost 250 or 60 years before it was accepted in Rome, the capital of Catholic Church in today's world. The first Christian church in India goes back to 68 AD, when something else was happening in Rome, when the early Roman Christians were being thrown into the limes and cages to be made tasty breakfast of. At that very time in India, you'd be surprised, those of you who don't know the history of Christian church in India. And those of you who are really interested can research. There is a very good, the Syrian church, that's how it is known. They have the branches even in California, in some places. But the first Christian church in the East came into existence in the first century AD, when St. Thomas went to India, was accepted as a divine messenger from God, because that's how Hinduism and Vedanta approach any saint, any prophet, any divine person from any tradition, no matter what language he speaks, what parables he uses, or what miracles he performs. So just the historical connection. So Vedanta or Hinduism looks upon Christ as incarnation. The Sanskrit term is avatara. Avatara, the Sanskrit means the transcendental divine descending to the empirical plane for all of us to see, for our to look as a guide, to inspire humanity, as Christ was, is still inspiring humanity, has been inspiring for the last 2000 years. So this avatara concept has two dimensions. It's called incarnation, that's a Sanskrit. Very rough is English translation. Avatara implies the divine descending down to the empirical plane to help us, to guide us, to inspire us. And again, at the same time, showing a transcendental divine connection. So when you live in this world, When you live like any human being, you are one with this world. But incarnation, even while living in this world, shows this divine transcendental connection. In the Christ story, that transcendental connection is the significance of resurrection. That's the only difference. So an incarnation comes to this world to inspire and to guide. At the same time, while living in this world, teaching this world, he also shows a divine transcendental connection. The divine transcendental is the transcendental Jesus. The Jesus we find before him is the historical Jesus. That's how incarnation really functions. You know. See, what's the difference between an incarnation and an ordinary human being? Human beings. He lives in this world and he may be remembered for some of his activities, some of his contributions. Not always with a pleasant memory. Some of them are remembered not in a very happy mood. But a divine incarnation is remembered for what he was beyond the body. And Christ, in this sense, is the transcendental, universal, spiritual ideal. It goes beyond the church or the organization that functions in his name. That is the idea of Christ in from a Vedantic perspective. Now, you'll be surprised when I tell you, those who don't know the history of Christology in India. You know, some of the early admirers and disciples of Sri Ramakrishna, Guru of Vivekananda, they were all deeply well-versed in the biblical literature. In fact, the very chronicler of the Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna, Mr. Yam, he was so deeply well-versed in the King James Version of the Bible that when he translated the Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna from Bengali into English, he uses a language very similar to the language of the King James Version of the Bible, 16th century. So he uses the same language, same English diction, English style. So that's why in Jesus, the light of Vedanta. So Vivekananda spoke of Christ with a deep reverence, calling him a great soul, an embodiment of renunciation and love, and in devotional language, God become man. That is avatara, mean incarnation. Incarnation just doesn't mean somebody reborn. Incarnation in the spiritual sense implies the divine becoming the human, but always showing that divinity within, the divine connection, which is what actually distinguishes him from the ordinary human beings. An incarnation in whom the divine shines through with extraordinary clarity. Vedanta, especially Advaita, teaches that the same divine reality, Brahman, dwells in all beings as the inner self, the Atman. In a figure like Christ, that divine consciousness is fully manifested, unobstructed, as a midday sun without clouds. So frequently, this phenomenon of incarnation is described in Vedantic literature like a huge wave. The ocean is the eternal reality. In the eternal reality, sometimes there is a huge wave. The wave is not different from the ocean. The wave is only a distinct, a momentous manifestation of the same ocean. But wave has its own creative power. It's visible for everyone to see. So every incarnation is a special manifestation of the divine. In Vedantic language, it's called Brahman. This, when Jesus says, I and my father are one, Vedanta hears an echo of the Mahavakya, Aham Brahmasmi, I am Brahman, not as a boast of the ego, but as the realization, the true I is not the same small personality, but the infinite spirit. That's called the universal Jesus. So you can see this distinction. Whom do we remember today? Not a human being who was the son of a carpenter, a Galilean carpenter. What we remember is a great divine phenomenon that has a relevance and a message that goes beyond even the community of those who claim to be his believers. The message and the inspiration, the relevance, doesn't recognize boundaries of culture, faith, or language. Because every spiritual incarnation is the common source of inspiration for the whole humanity. That's how Vedanta looks at Christ. So Vivekananda came to this country. You know why I'm referring to Vivekananda? There's a special reason for it. He was perhaps the first and the finest example of a Hindu Vedantic understanding of Christianity. I can give an example, and this is very telling, very, very significant. Vivekananda came to this country as a delegate of Hinduism in 1893, when America was celebrating the 400th anniversary of the Columbus discovery of the new continent. There was a huge, important program that was the World Parliament of Religion. Vivekananda came here. He was not at first recognized. But when he spoke, and his first speech lasted less than 9 minutes, so just 1.5 pages of printed matter. That speech made him an overnight celebrity. On the same platform, there were Indian representatives who came from India. They were all apparently Hindus. And one of them was P.C. Majumdar. P.C. Majumdar was a well-read scholar in Christology, in biblical literature. He was also a leader of the reformed Hindu denomination called Brahma Samaj. What I'm going to explain to you shows the greatness of this country and the greatness of the Catholicity of an enlightened Christian nation. So P.C. Majumdar concluded his speech with a call to missionaries to come to India and Christianize the entire Indian subcontinent. We are all waiting for you. These words came from P.C. Majumdar. He was a disciple of Sri Ramakrishna, who was well known to Vivekananda, who had participated in meetings in Calcutta in the company of Sri Ramakrishna and Vivekananda and other Brahma Samaj leaders. This man ends his speech, concludes his speech with a call to missionaries from America to come to India and convert the entire population. Americans did not appreciate him. That's what you have to keep in mind. Americans did not appreciate him. Because they didn't like that kind of, they perhaps felt that that's not the way Christ would have liked somebody to preach his name and his message. Vivekananda, in his speeches, he expresses his deep respect and regard for Christ as the spiritual teacher, just as India has produced not only Buddha, Rama, Krishna, many others. India produced dozens of saints and sages who, according to Vivekananda, spoke the same message using a different language, of course, that Christ taught in a different place, different culture, but the same divine message coming from the same source. There are differences in terms of socio-anthropological, linguistic, cultural specialities, peculiarities, but the message is the same. Vivekananda said, there's a deep regard for Christ, and he used to keep with you, I don't know how many of you are aware of this, he used to keep with you in his pocket a copy of the Imitation of Christ, just like he used to keep a copy of the Bhagavad Gita. Now, he, in his speech, talks about the greatness of the message of Christ. He also talks about the unpleasantness of missionaries going to India, trying to convert people by distributing bread. Christ taught man doesn't live with bread alone, But people were trying to convert people by distributing bread. Vivekananda did, he criticized it. And Americans liked it, remember. Americans cheered Vivekananda, appreciated him, because in him they found the voice of a true Christian. A true Christian is not somebody who goes about selling his products. He's the one who goes about talking about the message of his teacher, of his master. So that's why 4,000 Americans got up on the stands and cheered him. And Dr. Barrows, who is the editor of the compilation of the proceedings of the First Parliament of Religion, 1893, one of the books that an American president gifted to a visiting Indian Prime Minister some years ago, several years ago. That is Dr. Barrows' first edition of the Proceedings of the First Parliament of Religion, 1893. It's a great gift. In that speech, Vivekananda talked about the need for the message of Christ, but not anything that goes on in his name. So that is the greatness of Christ. What he taught and what he talked to people about, the message as a relevance and importance and a need for the entire humanity for all times. But that is true with regard to the messages for all great spiritual teachers. All great spiritual teachers come to this world for the whole humanity and not for any particular nation or culture. So in this, Vivekananda says, Jesus says, I and my Father are one. So there is this, you know, the best way for you to become a Christian according to Vedanta is to realize, to experience the divinity of Christ in our own heart. And not to just believe in, because you can be a believer in God and you can be a terrible human being. But if you practice belief in God, if you bring it to your experience, you'll be a sublime human being. So that's the relevance of Vivekananda's statement. Historically, Easter points the events in the first century Judea. A teacher from a marginal province of the Roman Empire crucified, whose followers testified that he rose from the dead, and on the third day, whether one emphasizes the physical miracle or interprets the resurrection more spiritually, Vedanta asks, what does this drama reveal about the spiritual path for every human being in any century, in our own times, for example? So the best way to celebrate Easter is to remember the message of Christ and to try to recall and re-experience the true inspiration that we all get from Christ and his message. So, from this viewpoint, the resurrection becomes the emergence of a new consciousness. And Gita, that's what Bhagavad Gita says, you know. Bhagavad Gita has got a very interesting statement. It says, wherever there is an emergence of unrighteousness and there's a decrease of righteousness, the divine manifests himself as a messenger, as a son of God, or as a Buddha, or a Krishna, in any culture. And he sets right this machine of, this spiritual machine, the phenomenon of human civilization. So, yada yada hi dharmasya glani bhavadi bharata, abhyutthanam atharmasya tada atmanam sajamyaham. In the Bhagavad Gita, a very famous statement. And for your information, is very frequently quoted by the great learned Christian teachers back in India, where I am coming from. Wherever there is a decline of virtue and simultaneously an increase of atharma, unrighteousness, then there is a spiritual phenomenon that happens inevitably. And that could happen in any culture, in any tradition. If you look at their message, the universal message, you find the essence of the message is the same. Humanness, compassion, love, forgiveness, all these qualities. It's essentially are the attributes of a good human being. There are differences with regard to the emphasis, the language used, the parables used, the food, the cultural factors, socio-anthropological factors may be different. But if you look beyond these differences, you can see the same message. Buddha did not affirm his faith in God. Christ was a messenger of God, a son of God. You can just see the parables. The most striking similarities, the same humanness, the same emphasis on compassion, the same emphasis that we should observe in our interaction with other fellow human beings. It's all focused on one central ideal: be a good human being. And good human, G should be capital. So when you become a good human being, what happens is, whether we accept or reject, whether we believe in or don't believe in, you all become Christians in this universal sense. So when you detach the transcendental, the universal idea of Jesus from the historical, socio-anthropological, geographical dimensions, that Christ is the Christ that belongs to the entire humanity. He can inspire, he can teach, he can guide humanity. That's why you find some of the greatest human beings, Tolstoy or Gandhi. Tolstoy was a Christian, Russian Orthodox Church. Gandhi was a Hindu, but you find if you look at their ideas, just for you coming close at home, if you look at the personalities of a man like Lincoln on the one hand and Gandhi on the other, Lincoln inspires people everywhere, including in India, especially even Gandhi himself was an example. Gandhi inspires many American, great enlightened Americans, and some of them are archetypal Christians like Martin Luther, Saint Martin Luther. So what I mean to say, spirituality doesn't recognize the boundaries of language, culture, or society, or anything, geographical barriers, anything. Spirituality is the unifying factor. So what we need today in our own troubled times is a going back. This Easter morning should be the dawn of a new vision. Easter morning awakens the disciples to be transformed in understanding of life. When we read the Easter story, it helps us to understand the importance of re-experiencing or replaying the resurrection within our own hearts. What the disciples thought was the end becomes the beginning. That is, the end of the historical Christ becomes the beginning of a universal Christ. That is, the trans-historical. What looked like defeat becomes the doorway to higher victory. From a Vedantic standpoint, it is the moment when we cease to identify exclusively with the perishable body, mind, and goes beyond the body-mind complex definition of life as a whole. Easter has a special message for our own age. How does the Easter drama speak to our historical moment, an age of scientific, advanced, aggressive, aggression? I don't want to give a list of the problems we are facing. But if you look at the times of Jesus, he also did not live in a very peaceful time, obviously. The Roman Empire expansion. And even, you know, that if you look at the history of the Judeo-Christian world, in the first and second century BC up to the second, third century AD, 500 years, they were not very peaceful times. The Roman Empire was expanding. Lot of bloodshed, uncertainty, conflicts and dilemmas that we do experience in our own life today. But in the midst of all that, there is a possibility of a higher alternative. In fact, that is the real significance of Easter for our times. In the midst of all this unpleasantness, I am not emphasizing unpleasantness. It would be totally hypocritical if I were to tell you everything is wonderful in this world, let us be merry and happy. That'd be very, very hypocritical. So it would be totally unpleasant and untruthful and hypocritical to pretend that everything is wonderful. The real message of Christ was, at a time when everything was not wonderful, Augustus Caesar, there's a time when Jesus lived. When Christ was crucified, he was a Roman emperor. Augustus Caesar was, Roman Empire was still expanding, you know, from Jordan River to Hadrian Wall, the huge geographical region. Things were not very peaceful in those days. But still, the greatest human being who lived in that era, you know, he belonged to the same age, more actual age. So technically, the actual age is between 2nd century BC to 6th or 7th century BC. So you find historians don't include Christ's name in the actual age. But from a cultural perspective, Buddha, who lived in 6th century BC, and Christ lived in maybe 1st century AD, they both belong to the actual age from a cultural perspective, not strictly in a historical perspective. So what it means is, though they lived in troubled times, like Buddha lived at a time when Magadha Empire was still about to take place, a lot of bloodshed was happening in the empire of the Maurya Empire, that is today's Bihar, all those places, part of the heart of the Maurya Empire at the time of Buddha, 6th century BC. At Christ's time, Roman Empire was expanding. So in spite of all those difficult times, we remember Christ, the silver line. There's a light coming from a distance, the hope of another possibility, the hope of a different alternate paradigm of life. We can be different. Though we are living in different times, we can be different. We can spiritually detach ourselves from the times in which we are living. So that is the relevance of Jesus Christ. He reminds us there is always hope. There is always a possibility, a different possibility, an alternate possibility. This undying hope that comes from first century, from the time of Jesus. So that's the real significance. We can all learn and draw inspiration from Christ in any era. And in fact, the fact that Christ also lived in a very difficult time, not much less unhappy than our own times, that itself is a source of hope and inspiration, that we can still draw lessons and inspiration from Christ. Not mechanically practicing Easter on a fine day every year. That's good, that's needed, that's very important. But going beyond that, the urgency, the immediacy of the message of Christ becomes all the more convincing and compelling in our own times. And I pray, I want to conclude my words with a prayer, that let and may Jesus continue to inspire all of you, all of humanity, for all times to come, everywhere in this world. Thank you and happy Easter to every one of you. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shantihi. Om Dyau Shanti, Randariksham Shanti, Prithvi Shanti, Roshadaya Shanti, Vanaspadaya Shantihi. Let there be peace and holiness in the hearts of everyone. Let there be peace and tranquility in the mountains, oceans, rivers, and waters, sky and clouds everywhere. Thank you. Namaste.